My theology was perfect a few months ago. It was tidy, buttoned up, pretty irrefutable. It matched that of my close friends. All of us were rich. All of us were sure that we were right. In fact, my theology matched that of many, many people throughout the centuries, and many, many, many people of your day.
The vast majority of the Book of Job consists of Job and his friends discussing the reasons for his misfortunes and what he should do to fix his problems. Unfortunately, none of them understand the true reasons for Job's predicament.
The nice thing about my theology was its simplicity. It exactly matched my life experience, and that was the final proof of it being right. It matched my experience and the experience of my friends. Now, here was my entire theology in a nutshell. God blesses the righteous, and God punishes those who do wrong. So, if you're rich, you must be righteous. The richer you are, the more righteous you must be. If you're poor, you must have done something wrong. The poorer you are, the worse your deeds must have been. Now, if you've done something wrong, you might fix it quickly by making a sacrifice to God. How about that? Now, that might sound silly to you, but I bet you believe that same theology at some point in your life. Maybe even now. Especially if you happen to be rich in money or family or health. But yeah, rich people tend to like this theology. And by rich, keep in mind that on a world scale, less than 3% of the American population is considered poor. I was the perfect example of this rich is blessed theology being correct. I was the most righteous man in the world. Really. Even God said so. I was the richest man in the known world. Really. And the one data point that I was absolutely sure of aligned with my theology. God rewards the righteous and punishes those who do wrong. Forty-two seconds. My bulletproof theology was shot down in less than a minute. 42 seconds was the amount of time it took for four messengers to deliver the news that I had lost everything dear to me. Everything except my wife and my health. And I lost my health soon after that. This is how I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that my theology must have been wrong. I'd not changed one iota of my behavior. Nothing I did caused my blessings to turn to calamity. I didn't know where my theology had gone wrong, but I absolutely knew one thing. It was wrong. I didn't know what theology was right, but I did know mine had a flaw, or at least was so incomplete as to be wrong. Therein was my problem. If my theology was wrong, and I didn't know what was right, how could I fix my problems? And I wanted my problems fixed. My wife and I were destitute. I was in debilitating pain. And all of my children were dead. I wish I'd never been born. Then, my three best friends showed up. and I expressed that same sentiment to them. They could take one look at me and know that my wish was an expression of truthfulness. If only I'd not been born. In their love for me, they tried their best to help me. The big, big problem? Their view of the world was one I knew to be wrong. My friends Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, wrong. All wrong. You should read my book, the book of Job, chapters 4 through 31, and enjoy possibly the most eloquent debate in history. But I'll give it to you in a summary fashion. Eliphaz, obviously you've done something terrible. Me? No, I have not. Bildad? Yes, you must have. Me? No, I did not. Zophar? Clearly you have. Me? Clearly to me, I have not. Eliphaz? Of course you have. Me? Of course I have not. Bildad? Don't be silly. You've done something awful. Me? Nope. Zophar? There's no other possible explanation. Me? I don't know what it is, but there must be another explanation. Eliphaz, this is ridiculous. You've obviously done something wrong. Me? It is ridiculous that you keep insisting that I have. I know I have not. Bildad? We can't reason with you. You're impossible. Me? In the most articulate way possible, I'm telling you, I did not do anything wrong. As you can imagine, this repetitive dialogue came to an end. They knew they were right because they could not imagine they were wrong. And they thought that I was righteous in my own eyes, but not in reality. While we were talking, our young friend Elihu showed up. And the more he heard our debate, the more frustrated he became. Now, he knew I was wrong, but my three friends had been incapable of refuting my position. So, with a multitude of words and the certainty of youth, Elihu tried to refute my position. And as you can guess, he made a mess of it. Now, like my three friends, a lot of what he said was true. But there was a hidden flaw in his thought process. We sat in absolute silence and frustration. They couldn't imagine how I could refuse to accept their point of view. In their minds, their wealth and health proved that they were wiser and more righteous than me. In my mind, their wealth and health made them so prideful that they could not see the possibility they could be wrong. I knew they were wrong, but I didn't have a solution to my distress. They felt sorry for me, and I felt so sorry for them, and I felt sorry for me. And for my wife.
You can imagine that I am gloating and planning, practically celebrating. Job is almost ready to give up on God. I can sense it. I am about to win my contest with God. Job's friends played right into my hands. They won't be able to convince Job that he is wrong, but I believe that they will be able to inject doubt into his mind. Once the doubt starts, it won't be too long before it grows. He begins to doubt his faith in God. Blaming God will only be one small step away. I know that I will win from here because Job and his friends are asking the wrong question for the wrong reason. And nobody is there to point that out to them. They think that if they understand the reasons why Job has misfortune, that they can easily fix it. That is wishful thinking and an unrealistic belief in how much control they have. And they think there is a simple reason for why Job has had these tragic things happen to him. They have to believe there is a simple reason, otherwise it is unlikely they can fix the problem. And they all want the problem fixed. But the problem of pain and suffering is not simple. I've got more fingers than you, and I don't have enough fingers to count all the many causes of pain and suffering. Let's see, there is me. People cause their own pain and suffering more often than they know. Other people cause it. It's the nature of life as God has designed it. Where you were born, your family, your community, relationships, those sorts of things. Aging, disease, natural disasters. There are so many causes that it's actually pretty amazing that there's not more pain and suffering in the world. And then, there is the big one that nobody wants to admit. Sometimes, God allows pain and suffering to occur for reasons known only to Him. Might be for someone's good, someone else's good. And my least favorite, the one humans just cannot grasp. So God will be glorified through the pain and suffering. In fact, this whole experience with Job has taught me something. I can use pain and suffering to keep people from glorifying God. Doubt Him, blame Him. Why didn't I think of this before? Just a few more hours and I will show God how Job blames Him for all his troubles. Job blaming God. Nothing can derail this from happening. I am in complete control.